In the world of wine, there is nothing more magnificent than a twisted old vine, but the reason why we should care for them is not always so immediate. What should we take in consideration when talking about old vines? My returning guest, Sarah Abbott, runs the Old Vine Conference. We discuss what are the values of old vines for the industry and how the global wine community can support them. In this episode, Sarah talks about what she aims to achieve with her conferences. We delve into the hurdles that a vine needs to overcome to get to old age and the economic factors. Sarah also highlights a research that shows how vines' DNA mutate in their old age, showing that they are adapting to the terroir, making them vital to the diversity pool of vines. This is the Looking Into Wine podcast, and Mattia Scarpazza, your host, welcome. Hi, I'm Mattia Scarpazza, and this is the Looking Into Wine podcast. Wine and winemaking can be complex, but this podcast has a simple mission. We want to give you the skills and tools to harness your passion about wine. Through this series, we will shine a spotlight on some of the different regions, processes, and concepts that shape the fascinating world of wine. I hope you enjoy the show and your own journey, Looking Into Wine. Welcome to the Looking Into Wine. I'm Mattia Scarpazza, your host, and today I welcome back to the show Sarah Abbott, Master of Wine. Sarah writes about wine for various publications, including the World of Fine Wine and TMarkin.com. Sarah, she's also been previously a guest on the show to talk about the wines of Prosecco Valdobbiadene Superiore. Be sure to check that episode out. And today, she's here to talk about her latest venture, the Old Vine Conference. We'll be talking about what makes Old Vine special and why we should preserve them and more. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Mattia.
It's a pleasure, it's a pleasure. So, why did you decide to start this Old Vine Conference? What was the epitome?
Yes, okay. Well, it came about through various conversations with fellow wine colleagues, through, I guess you would call it, my own great interest over many years in the history and heritage and kind of the way that of wine, and the way that if you look at the continuation of wine, it basically carries the story of humanity and connects humanity in many different ways and connects humanity to nature. So my degree was classical and ancient history, and I'm really interested in the deep time of wine.
Yeah.
And how this came about, the Old Vine Conference is a non-profit, and we founded it, myself and my co-founders, Leo Austin and Alan Griffiths, MW. Initially, we founded it because they were wanted to launch a range of wines that were all about working with old vine parcels. Mm-hmm. And they came to me because they asked for my help in doing a conventional launch. And in the conversations that we had, I gave them so many reasons why this was a bad idea, that they would need so much help, and that although there were great individuals and even organizations all over the world who really believe in the importance of this heritage,
yeah,
that there wasn't a kind of category. There isn't the sense, when you go into a wine shop, you don't see old vine wine, or you don't see heritage vineyards, you know, you don't see it on wine lists. And their response to that, to their credit, was actually, you're right, and we think there's a bigger picture here, so let's work together and try to bring everyone together all around the world who care about this to actually create the category.
So your aim is to create awareness of old vine and try to create a category for old vine.
It needs a place to live in the commercial wine world, and it needs that place to live because at the moment, many really beautiful, high quality, deeply culturally significant old vineyards are lost. We're losing them very rapidly. They're being grubbed up because the belief or the previous experience has been that they can't be made to pay commercially. So although many people in the wine business, and certainly many growers and winemakers, really value old vine fruit, it's more often than not the case that it is valued commercially. And it's a lot more expensive to tend, to cultivate, farm these vineyards. So you have to create a category which can command more money. And we know it can be done because certain countries or regions have succeeded in doing it. But you really need it to have resonance in the major wine markets, offering wine from all over the world to make the difference.
So what regions are they? Because I know that you've been working with some of those regions. I read some country that are working quite hard. Well, how are they operating? What they're doing to preserve their old vines?
That's a really good question. And I started researching this, must be nearly 2 years ago now. And I think that probably the I think the benchmark for a really successful integrated approach for identifying good old vineyards, protecting them, ensuring that they're being maintained to the very best quality, and that the people who are working them understand how to farm them and are rewarded properly for it. So you take all that, so the viticultural side, and then you need to make sure that this great old vine fruit is then valued by winemakers who might be growing it, and that it doesn't necessarily just disappear into a generic blend, and that you then find a way to talk about it and market it and have it actually achieve higher prices in shops and in restaurants. That's what you need. And there's one country that has done that as a complete holistic success, and that's the South African Old Vine Project. And they have a category called Heritage Vineyards.
Okay.
This was a project that was really kicked off by Rosa Kruger, who's a viticulturalist. Mm-hmm. And they started out with a handful of producers who signed up to the Heritage Vineyards seal on their winery, put the logo on their bottle. And they now have scores. In fact, I know it's definitely well over 50. It may even be close to 100 now. They have absolutely scores of top, wonderful producers in South Africa who are signed up to this project. And not only have they got this massive engagement, but they've also conducted research in association with Stellenbosch University to analyse whether having the Heritage Vineyard seal on a bottle has an impact on the consumer perception. And it does. So they've done so well at communicating this that they've actually succeeded in creating, if you like, a category of what they call Heritage Vineyard wine.
Yeah. And does he have a seal on the neck of the label or something?
So they have a sort of a logo that goes onto the bottle. They also have really, really, really attractive sort of signs that go on to the outside of the winery, so that they're a certified Heritage Vineyard winery. They manage to bring everyone together, consensus, to agree a charter. Charter of standards to which people must sign up if they want to join.
Yeah.
And I am full of admiration for what they've achieved, because to create this kind of integrated campaign, it has had an impact across the industry, because one of the things that Andre and Rosa worked on is that they spoke with some of the biggest wine making companies, the biggest buyers of grapes.
Yeah.
And they brought those buyers into the project. So they persuaded those buyers that it was in their interests to make old vine wine and market old vine wine and pay a higher price for old vine fruit. So that's South Africa.
You basically, because I think we need to do a little bit of housekeeping, because you're running these conferences and you basically trying to create then something.
Yes.
Bringing this sort of idea of creating a protocol and showing then it works to the rest of the world and bringing awareness to this. Well, how many times are you planning to do these conferences and what is the plan for that?
Yes. So we held the first conference online. We call them a conference. It's quite a grand name actually for what for a kind of an online conversational interview hosted by brilliant journalists with great practitioners of old vine expertise. And the first conference that we had was held in March of this year. And we had speakers from the from the Save the Old campaign in Lodi, California.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amazing old vines in Lodi, old vines in, and we had Stuart Spencer, who spoke to us about their campaign. We actually had Rosa and Andre from South Africa. And we also had individual growers. So we had the first one in March, we had the second one in July. And the speakers in July included... We brought in some more sort of academics and applied researchers. So we had Dylan Grigg from Australia, Dr. Dylan Grigg, who is a viticulturalist. You know, he's a really hands-on viticulturalist.
Yeah.
But he's also a consultant. And he has researched old vines for his doctoral thesis, which was awarded... at the highest level, and is a really fascinating piece of research. We do actually link to it from oldvines.org. And then we had speakers from Chile, from Argentina, Laura Catena, from Bolivia, Nayan Gauda, who's making wine from 200-year-old arboreal vines in Bolivia.
Wow.
And we had two growers, both in France, who have succeeded really on a shoestring in promoting old vine viticulture through memberships and through Adopt an Old Vine.
I'm going to put the links for the conference and the show, so people who are listening, they're going to be able to find it in the show notes. And also you were telling me earlier that you have another one in September and you're planning to do two or three years and then possibly some live.
Oh, we'll definitely do some live. We do hold tastings of old vine wine, and we ticket them, and the proceeds go back to the non-profit so that we can continue to sustain the organization.
As soon as you have one in the UK, I'll be sure to come in.
It would be lovely to have you. Yeah, that would be great.
I think it's been very interesting to understand why we should preserve the old vine. And what did you learn through this? What was for you the two new things that you learned through this conference that you didn't realize before? And I think
that's a great question. So the thing that I have come to understand is that the way that vines cultivated, vines that are planted and cultivated with a view to long-term life are already planted in sites that are appropriate. They are planted with a forward-looking eye to the availability of water. They're basically from their genesis, they are planted sustainably. Because if you are planting and you're thinking, well, I need to basically allow this vineyard to be really resilient on its own terms. And you make all kinds of decisions that are really consistent with, I suppose, what you would call the principles of regenerative agriculture. So I've learned a lot about regenerative agriculture and regenerative capitalism. And both of those concepts have a lot of resonance with the way that good old vine heritage and old vine viticulture is described. The thing I hadn't realized is that actually there's a value of good old vineyards that goes beyond even the lifespan of that particular vineyard, which is that as vines develop and grow in a given environment, they adapt to that environment and they show epigenetic adaptation.
Okay.
And it means that they basically have, there are changes that occur in their genome, and some of these changes are inheritable. And what this means is that when you have a diversity of old vineyards that have basically developed this kind of ultra terroir adaptation, they are incredibly valuable for their genetic material. And so, for example, we were talking about this with Dylan Grigg and also Laura Catena in Argentina, from of Catena Zapata. They were both really clear about the importance of this genetic material. And in fact, Catena Zapata have made so many plantings using the cuttings, the massal selections from the old vineyards. And the value of those massal selections gives this diversity, which is robustness. And we need our vine population to be really robust because climate change is a reality. And the more diversity we can have, the more resilient and robust that vine material can be.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know if you heard of this, and I'm going to just span out a second. I was looking at, there is a pandemic going on with the banana plantation because they have a mono planting globally, and the virus got to South America, and there is huge effort to not get this virus going around because we're on the verge of losing them. And I think it's for vine, thankfully we have different clones of resistance, but we know more genetic is better. We can't have the risk of not having the diversification.
This is absolutely indisputable. And in fact, Jean-Philippe Roby, the associate professor at Bordeaux, spoke about this. And his argument is that it's the wrong thing to do to try to conserve a couple of plants in a kind of, you know, wine museum. That actually, simply by devoting 5% of a given region's hectarage to the kind of, if you like, the live, you know, in situ cultivation of old vines, which are often, the thing about old vines is that they are often the way that we are able to hold on to old varieties.
Yeah.
Because there's a big move for the homogenization of varieties. You know, the top 15 international varieties account for something like 70% of vineyard plantings all over the world. And there can be great varieties, but the point is we are also losing that kind of diversity. And absolutely, the more I have researched this, the more I've realized it's not just that good. It has to be good. Just because a vineyard's old doesn't mean it's good. But when it is old and it's good, absolutely brings depth of flavor, a certain balance, a vitality in the wines, but also other kinds of depth, you know, cultural depth, what the UN describes as biocultural heritage, you know, links with local and traditional agricultural practices.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a really big trend all over the world, in all aspects of food production to start valuing this, because the way in which, obviously highly efficient in many ways, very necessary intensive agriculture has developed,
yeah,
has meant that we are in danger of, you know, we say in English, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And wine can be part of this conversation, and I think we should be part of that conversation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, when you talk about good vineyards and good sites, it makes me, what are the risks for this old vine that they live throughout their life? What are the risks for them to, for old vine not to become an old vine?
Yes, that's a really good question. So, I mean, I know I've been talking about the South African Old Vine Project a lot, but it's just that they have done a lot of work on this. And the research that they found is that there's a kind of critical period at which even a healthy but maybe unfashionable vineyard that gets to about 30 years of age, certainly in South Africa, was being grubbed up. That kind of 30-year-old certainly has been found in the New World to be a kind of point where it perhaps it also if it starts to intersect with a new trend in wine, a fashion, you know, that people think, oh well, let's get rid of this Chenin Blanc and plant Sauvignon Blanc instead. That around that kind of age, 30 years of age, is a point when actually many vineyards are grubbed up. And that's why, for example, not just in the South African Old Vine project, but also in the Barossa Old Vine Charter, their classification of old vine starts at about 30 years, because they want to bring good 30-year-old vineyards into, you know, under protection, so that they can become 40 and 50 and 60 year old.
Because there is this thing, and then when after about the balance from vigorous after a certain age, the vine sort of not slow down, but it produces a bit less, and you have the risk of not being so valuable for high production, high volume.
That's one of the concerns. Although what we found, what we were told in the most recent conference when we were listening to Dylan Grigg and the presentation of his research, is that it's not inevitable that there's a drastic reduction in yield from old vines. He found, for example, that the pH of grapes from older vineyards tended to be lower, so therefore more conducive to freshness. There's also some new research that's actually been conducted in California, which shows that essentially, I'm simplifying, that older vineyards with their deeper root system and with their thick woody trunks and reserves have a reaction to drought and kind of extreme weather that is just more moderate than with younger vines. So the other thing that we have discovered, and this was from the first conference when we had a presentation from Marco Simonit, who is a master pruner, yes. And he and his colleagues, his business partner Pupalo Sirch, they are basically, they kind of look like hipster pruning heroes, but they work all over the world actually retraining and repruning and teaching how to prune for long life, because there's a real epidemic in certain parts of the wine world with fungal diseases such as Escher. And Escher is basically introduced into the plant and spread through pruning wounds. And So there's a, I mean, this is a whole other thread. There's a level of, you know, pruning geekery.
I was going to invite Simone to one point to the show, because I saw him talking. It was super interesting, and definitely at some point I will have him coming and talking. But absolutely, I know then you can find on your website on the oldvineconference.com. .org?
.org, yeah. .org. Oldvines.org, yeah. Thank you.
That's it. You can find them and online as well. So I'll be sure to link everything and some of the series of searches as well. If you have them, I will be happy to link them.
Yeah, there's some good resources on the website now. So we have links to all the organisations such as Barossa Old Vine Charter, South African Old Vine Project, Save the Old Campaign in Lodi, the Vigno Project in Chile with Old Vine Carignan and Mole. Also links to some really good articles on heritage old vines. And if I could just mention that Jancis Robinson, Master of Wine, has been writing and championing the, what is called the irreplaceable resource of good old vineyards for about 15 years. And she has chosen as the theme for her writing competition this year old vines. Yeah. And she's had over 100 entries about great old vineyards. So do check out Jancis Robinson as Robinson's website as well, which is jancisrobinson.com.
Yeah.
Because they are now publishing their shortlist.
It's becoming it's a global concern, and there is people really taking on. And I was very impressed when you did your first conference after like a few days of the reaction from press all over. I saw them, especially in the UK, and I found it super interesting. And I'm very happy to be here and trying to do my part and promoting your project and the Old Vine project, because I have tried many old vines and I did see the difference and I value them. And so I think it's a beautiful heritage, especially for, as you were saying, for the preservation of old varieties. Some of them, they only find an old vineyard, an old vine, so you can't really grab them up. And I just had one last question, because I think you might be able to help me. I know then, what is the risk of having pulling up systems like in the early 2000s with like Carignan in southern France. You know, there is any of this risk, or do you feel it's a bit more concerned now?
As Elias Lopez Montero, who is a winemaker and winery owner in Spain, in La Mancha, told us that they're losing, you know, thousands of hectares a year. And in Spain, there's a risk. In Portugal, they're losing a lot as well. Our speaker, Tiago, who came on in the first conference, was very persuasive, very passionate in his call for that to actually be understood in Portugal. And one of the one of those weird, bad quirks of fate is that as Europe has kind of started to share, you know, wealth and investment, which is great, okay, I'm a fan of that, but as it started to share, what actually happens is that for many wineries, for example, in Alentejo, which is a really kind of beautiful, it's really rural part of Portugal, and wineries who received funding for improvements to vineyards, one of the conditions of funding is that they had to start completely from the beginning. So they had to rip everything up and start again. And I mean, I should just say, I'm not sentimental about it. There are some vineyards that happen to be old, but they're not great, you know. It's the wrong variety, or it's not a great clone, or, you know, it's not a great site. But when they are great, they are really the pinnacle. They're the nexus of everything that we love about most about wine. But yes, they're being lost. And the diversity of many varieties is being lost. And there is a small niche community of people who really care about this stuff, you know, in every part of the world. You know, the Australians have the alternative varieties movement, but they are, you know, they're like the crazy artists shouting in the corner. But, you know, if you get a lot of crazies together and they can show actually how beautiful and unique and exciting the wines from these vineyards are, then you can turn that tide, I think.
Absolutely. I saw some of these examples in when I was in Chile last year with like the small producer in Vigno, and now having some of the biggest, the top four producers in Chile starting to
exactly.
do their own. They have the old vine vineyard that used to have them for blends, and now they're using them for their own wine and trying to promote. And Vigno, you have other associations in Chile. I know Chile because I know Chile quite well, but yeah, no, it's very interesting. And also, I think it's, when you were saying, as we closing up, I think when you're saying adopt the old vine, I think you were talking about Domaine Jones. I interviewed her on the show, so if for my listeners to go and check the episode with Katie Jones, because it was very interesting, and she speaks about buying this old vineyard in Fitou and getting all story together. It's very fascinating, so it was very interesting. Sarah, I mean, I really enjoyed having you on the show, and if there's anything you think we miss, just let me know now, and we'll be happy
I think it's been great. I've really enjoyed talking to you. You've asked me so many great questions, and you know, thank you for the chance to share this with you and with your listeners. And I hope to be able to welcome you to the next virtual Old Vine Conference in September 21st and 22nd. And do take a look at our website for anyone who's interested. It's www.oldvines.org. And also do take a look at JancisRobinson.com, where you can view all of the shortlisted entries for the Old Vine wine writing competition. It's just like the most beautiful fairy story of wine heritage. Yeah. But it's not even a fairy story, it's notes. Real. Sorry.
No, I'll add it on the show notes so that they'll be able the listeners will be able to find it. Okay, Sarah, thank you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. And I hope to see you in person soon.
Me too, thank you.
Take care.
You listen to the Looking Into Wine podcast discussion on the values of old vines with my guest Sarah Abbott. Make sure to read the show notes to find the links to the Old Vine conference. If you're finding the podcast valuable, remember to hit the subscribe button and to tell your friends. You can find Looking Into Wines on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and every major listening app. If you're enjoying the podcast, you can donate on mattiascarpazza.com. Music produced by Samuele Di Nardo, editing and mastering by Tommaso Ascoli, and I am your host, Mattia Scarpazza.